Welcome everyone to the Underground Online Seminar 2 follow-up conference calls. This is we're gonna grill the rogue agents that we had on the stage there, and we're doing the follow-ups once a week for the next 4 weeks. And today I'm lucky enough to have Aaron Monahan on the line, and also Tim Carter is going to be joining us in just a little bit. What I did for the other calls, it's going to be three people on there, but Aaron and Tim both had so much information and got mobbed by so many people that I decided to put them on the line just by themselves to get a little bit more time with them if possible. And depending on how noisy it gets, we may be able to open it up live for questions. We'll see how that goes. Aaron, you're there?
Yep, I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, excellent. Good. Good to have you here. All right, while you were on stage at the Underground 2, I mean, you were just rattling off ideas.
Rattling or rambling.
And rattling off idea after idea. And I mean, great stuff was coming out of there, and people were just telling me that, you know, they're just taking notes after notes after notes. So I want to try and get some clarifications on a couple things,
sure.
And then, you know, feel free to add in any other input that you like. I'll start with some of the attendee questions. And one of them was, if you were starting a niche business from scratch today, how would you find the right marketplace?
Well, you know, I've tried several different markets now, and usually, well, all the time, the ones that have worked for me are ones that where I know something about the topic and that I'm passionate about the content somehow.
Mm-hmm.
When I usually, anytime I've gone outside of my expertise, it's been difficult. It's usually not as successful as I want. So I think really the first thing you've got to do is ask yourself what you're passionate about and what you know about. And that could be, you know, as simple as just something you've had experience with. You know, I've known people who went through a pregnancy and then started an ebook around pregnancy, or raised kids and then started ebooks around parenting. So, you know, that's really the first thing. The second thing I would look for in terms of a niche is, you know, just asking yourself, do you want to be a big player in a small niche, or do you want to start off as a small player in a big niche? You know, the more narrow the niche is, the better chances you can become the leader. And if you can kind of carve out your own niche that no one's really doing, that's all the better. But me personally, I like to go after the bigger markets. That way, you know, there's more long-term upside. You know, I just assume that I'm going to be doing bigger and bigger deals over the next few years. So I'd rather be in a market that allows that upside. But, you know, it's really just a personal preference and what you want to commit to it.
And by upside, it's the ability to advertise in more places. And
yeah, just in terms of reach. I mean, if you're selling a weight loss offer, you know, you're going to be able to do massive reach on just about any website. If you have the right conversion and the right back end, you can advertise just about anywhere.
Right.
But if you're selling an ebook about how to raise a hummingbird, your reach is limited to that one specific thing, and you might, you know, have some luck on bird watching sites, but you can't go out you can't go advertise on MySpace.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it really is about reach is the main thing.
Okay, and that's interesting that you said that all the ones that you've been successful with is where you've had some kind of passion or interest in, and not just, you know, you've identified it as a hot market. Like, I don't know, let's say, for instance, stock investing is always a hot market.
Right, right.
And, you know, to me, I'm not really passionate about stock market investing. But you're saying that you've never had any success where you've gone out and had other people try and create content for you and so on.
It's not that I haven't had any. It's just that I've had more around something I know more about. And, you know, when you know something about a topic, you're able to sell in that market much more. You're doing something like an ad system where, you know, what you know online is how to get natural organic search engine traffic, and, you know, you're just going to take out a business because, you know, your business model is going to be based on the ad system revenue on the side.
Hey, Aaron.
Yeah.
I can hardly hear you. I don't think we're having major static. Are you calling in from a cell phone?
Yes, I am. Hold on one sec.
Let me.
I'm outside, so it might be the wind. I was enjoying the sunshine out here, but maybe that was a bad idea.
Yeah, get back indoors.
All right, one second. Is that better, Yannick?
Yeah, much better. Do me a favor. Could you just answer that again, if you remember what you said? I was asking you about that you know, we're talking about niches where you don't have a passion or interest in really yourself, and
right,
that you've had some success there, but not as much as.
Yeah, it's just not been as successful. And the caveat to that was what I was saying with, you know, it really depends on your business model as well. For me, I've been doing direct sales. So I think part of the reason markets that I don't know much about have been less successful is because I didn't understand the copywriting perspective as well. I didn't understand the, you know, the fears and the hopes and the desires of the consumer. If you're doing something like probably what Tim will talk about, which is developing content and, you know, monetizing it through AdSense and through natural search, I think it's less important that the topic is something that you're passionate about, especially if you're outsourcing the content,
mm-hmm.
because there you're not necessarily selling an ebook or a product.
Okay. All right, yeah, that's definitely a good distinction. That's interesting. Any other factors that you look at? I mean, for me, I try and look at how reachable the marketplace is, how passionate they are, if they got money, if, you know, lots of
yeah,
other things like that.
Absolutely, you know, all of those things and more. You know, there's kind of two camps of wisdom. There's if there's a lot of competitors in the market, that's probably a good sign because
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's money to be made. If I were starting a small niche business that I weren't going to commit to on a full-time basis and just wanted an extra, you know, a few $1,000 a month or something, then I would probably do something where there's a lot of competitors and just kind of using what I know, just, you know, bite off a little bit of the market share and not worry about all the competing products in the arena. But if I were doing something where I was going to build a whole business around it, I would try to go after something more innovative and become the dominator of the category if I'm going to commit all of my energies to it.
Gotcha. Okay. Another user or attendee question is, do you have any favorite resources for listing a web business for sale?
Well, you know, the one I mentioned on stage, bizbuysell.com, I've never sold anything successfully through it. I've never sold anything through a third-party website, but that one seems to be kind of a hotbed, and I kind of watch that in general for emerging opportunities and see what's out there. It's www.bizbuysell.com. You know, people have had a lot of success with listing their businesses on eBay. And, you know, I think there's a lot of validity to that strategy as well. So, you know, ultimately, depending on the business size, oftentimes, you know, if you're successful at selling it, it'll be to someone that you meet in the offline world, you know, someone in your industry. A good place to start is just contacting your large competitors and just kind of educating them about your business and kind of get a feel for if they're in the acquisition stages of, you know, if they're acquisitive and are looking for businesses to acquire. I think that's really the best place to start.
How do you do that without making them feel like you're, I don't know, it seems like to me you'd lose some positioning there if you approach them and
I mean, the way I would do it, you know, is really just instead it would be more about, hey, you know, let's have a conversation about how we can work together and how our businesses are similar and how we can add value and make money together. People always like it when you say, let's figure out how to make money together.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that, you know, that's kind of the pathway to, you know, increasing your affiliate commissions or landing specialized JV deals, et cetera. So you don't have to necessarily be contacting them just to put your business in the market. You could be contacting them just for, you know, general relationship and possibly good things to come out of it. It's amazing what you'll learn about a marketplace once you talk to people and get to know them in real life. That's why I recommend going to a lot of conferences and workshops. And, you know, just your seminar, for instance, Yannick, I mean, I met a lot of people in the education space and learned a ton just from really building the relationships, keeping in touch with people through email and phone since the seminar. And, I mean, that kind of experience doesn't come through just cold emails that, you know, where you've never met a person before, you've never seen them. There's just something about meeting people in real life that I think leads to bigger things.
Right. Yeah.
I've flown to places and met with people in real life without ever meeting them, just so I could get that experience and get to know them and see what their business is all about. And those times where I made that decision has actually been usually the breakthroughs for me. So.
Okay, so it's not about, hey, going to a big competitor and approaching him saying, hey, do you want to buy my business? It's
Right. It's more about just, I mean, if you're educated in the marketplace, you'll know who the targets are. You'll know who to go to. The further you develop in that marketplace, the more you'll just kind of have a feel for what to do.
Right. Okay, very good. And again, going back to a market research question, another attendee wants to know, how do you validate a market before making an investment in it?
A good way to do is just throw up if you're looking to make sure, let's say, that you can get subscribers on the cheap, a good way would be to put a landing page up and say, a popular technique, hey, I'm writing an ebook. What's the number one question you have about the ebook?
Right.
Put your email address in here, and I'll send you a free copy as soon as it's done. And a little trick to that is you can create, let's say you're creating an ebook with three bonuses, and you know that, we'll go back to the hummingbird example, one of the bonuses is going to be, the top 50 areas in the country to spot, rare red-breasted hummingbirds.
Right.
So you can say, I'm going to give this ebook out. What other information would you be interested in the ebook? As a hummingbird lover. And then when you release the ebook, give them that ebook, but of course you're really just giving them the bonus report and then say, if you want the deluxe course, so that way you're building a list that you can monetize as soon as you launch the actual website rather than giving away the ebook and not being able to use those names. Another thing you can be doing while you're collecting leads, especially if you're not getting like huge volumes of traffic, is send out a few affiliate offers to that list and see how well they convert, because chances are that's going to be indicative of how they're going to convert when you're mailing to them.
Okay, so you build up the list and then you send them out affiliate offers for other people's products.
Yeah, I mean, if you can afford it, because, it depends on, how many subscribers you're collecting and what price. I mean, you might have to put some money up front, but you can start monetizing that list on day one just through some affiliate offers. You can actually monetize it before Google even charges your credit card, just by having an autoresponder pre-built around that marketplace. If I'm looking at a market and whether to invest in it, that's one option. Another option would be just kind of contacting other people in the market, figure stuff out. I go to stuff like websites like Hoovers.com, and we'll research the big companies in the market and research their public filings or their annual reports, and just kind of get a feel for what's going on, where the money's being made, that type of thing. I do that in the education market all the time. It's like, okay, should I tackle this test? Should I release a product around this test prep? And chances are I'll be able to find a company that does, massive amounts of revenue in the public space that, has tutoring services, et cetera, for this test, and I'll find out a ton about that market. Like, the buyers tend to be people with master's degrees, or the marketplace is estimated to be this big, and that kind of thing. So, really surround yourself with both the low level and the high level, everything from building a list and seeing what price you can get for a subscriber on Google to researching the industry as a whole and seeing if it's something you really want to be in.
Interesting. Okay. If I know you've been in a couple different niches, and a lot of people have questions when they're just starting out, and you don't have to reveal what the niche is. You and I have talked about it, and it's obviously been very profitable for you. But when you were going into something completely separate, how did you do? Did you create the product first? Did you build your list first, like you just talked about, or is it another process?
Yeah, the ones that I've done, I've built the product first. I made a decision to go for it.
You knew that you were going to invest time and effort into it.
Right. In two different niches that I've gotten into, I've had other people develop the product, and I've worked on the website while they're working on the product.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually doing that with a couple projects right now, as I'm having some of the content outsourced to very, very intelligent people that I trust and are getting paid very well. And while they're doing that content, I'm working on the sales letter so that as soon as I have to pay them for the content, I'm able to monetize it by launching the product for a list. It's actually, it's basically a way to make money without risking money, because I know that I'm going to make money as soon as I launch this new product to my list.
Because
it's an existing market
okay.
that I have a list in. Now, back to your question with branching off, assuming you're going to create something like, say, an ebook, You know, you can really do it either way. You can build the list first and then create the ebook, or you can create the ebook first. If I had to do it again, I would probably create the list first and the website first. That way, just to make sure that it's going to work. And if I would have done that in one of the markets I got involved in, I would have saved a lot of time because it didn't work. So, and I would find the top three affiliate offers in that space and make those into the autoresponder. And I would give away a lot of the free content or free advice as a newsletter as I'm writing the ebook, and just build a relationship with these subscribers and keep telling them at the end of every message, hey, you know, I'm working on this book. What else do you want to know? What else would be helpful? And then, you know, I can't wait to release it. I'll let you know as soon as it's published. You know, by the time you send the 15th message out like that, and you keep telling people it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, and then it does come, you've built up so much anticipation, it's just going to be a windfall of money.
Now, you think an ebook is the easiest foray first for somebody?
Well, you know, it's a lot less overhead.
Yeah.
There's no fixed costs in terms of delivery. There's no inventory to manage. You know, you're selling air. So, you know, information products themselves are virtually all like that. I mean, even if you're doing like a $600 5 CD, 3 workbook set, I mean, you're only paying $10, $15, maybe $20 for duplication of all this stuff. So information product business in general is what I prefer. But yeah, ebook is easy, unless you're trying to do a different marketing technique, like, you know, making money from AdSense or doing a lot of SEO stuff.
Right.
And monetizing a different way. But this is, you know, this is what I've done, is just selling to consumers. I think that the ability to sell is pretty priceless, and then once you can master that, you can pretty much write your own ticket.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that for sure. All right, let me segue into some of my own questions, actually. I was reviewing your presentation, and one of the things that stood out for me was that you talked about the first three email messages being the most important. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, you know, we've got the tracking now where we can kind of see performance per message, you know, over long periods of time. And what's interesting is, you know, in one of the sequences I think I mentioned on stage, you know, I've got over 100 messages. But if you look collectively at all of the sales resulting from this sequence, you know, over 50% of the sales in general are from the first three messages, because that's when your readership is the highest, your open rate is the highest, and your removals are the lowest. Like, you know, that's when everyone gets those messages, but over time they might unsubscribe, or you might have an undelivered address, and you lose readership over time.
Or they could lose interest in the topic.
Exactly, they might lose interest in the topic, especially if you have a short-term marketplace.
Right.
So, you know, really focus on those first three messages, and don't be afraid to, every couple months, go back and look at those first three messages and keep editing them, because you'll keep learning more of the triggers and hot buttons in your marketplace. You want to test those messages for all the spam filters across all the ISPs. You want to use, you know, stuff like Spam Assassin to figure out what the score is. You know, find all the keywords in it that are triggering any spam filters. Test HTML versus plain text. I mean, do everything you can around those first messages, because that's most important. Now, for the content in those messages, the general approach I take is, one, that first message is going to kind of determine if they're going to read the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the headline determines whether they read the first sentence or not. So if you give them value in that first message, it's more likely that they're going to read the second one. So I try to stack up the value, and I also kind of test just educating them about the product in that message as well. So a lot of times I'll test an FAQ versus a free report. And the free report will just be an email, and I'll just call it a free report. I'll say, hey, you know, here's this free report, the 10 most dangerous mistakes that you make when looking for scholarships. And I'll test that with, you know, something like frequently asked questions about my scholarship secrets program. And the reason I still test those on all new products and markets I get into is because sometimes the report will work better and sometimes the FAQ will work better. I think a lot of it depends on if your traffic is looking for your product, or if your traffic is just generally interested in a topic and doesn't know much about your product. So if they're looking for I'm giving you an example. That's a good example. Let's say, you know, someone searched in Google bird watching guide,
mm-hmm.
And you're selling a bird watching guide. In that case, the autoresponder message would probably be more apt to convert more highly if it was, you know, educating them on what your guide offers, and just more in-depth questions that you have from readers about what it covers. Whereas if you were searching bird watching, if you were selling bird watching secrets, a guide to the secrets to finding the best birds, and someone searched birds in Google,
right?
That's an instance where you might want to just build a relationship up a little bit more, and I wouldn't necessarily push the book too heavily in message number one. I'm all for making sales in every single message. At the end of the message, you definitely need to sell, but
is that just a little paragraph, or is that?
Well, I would make that first message, you know, hey, you know, I was recently in whatever state, whatever country, and, you know, I saw this rare bird or whatever, and
yeah.
Let me show you exactly how I did it. I took these three steps, and then at the end of those three steps, and say, you know, if you want to learn more advanced techniques for how to find the most rare and beautiful birds out there, in every state and country. Across the world, click here to get my bird secrets guide. It's only $29.95. You know, it comes with money back guarantee. Click here. Click here for more details, and you'll be taken straight to my website. And then I would close it. You know, your friend Yannick Silver.
Right.
And then that way you've given them value, and they read your next message, and then they read your message after that. And if you're continuously giving them value, you're building a relationship. And then on message 10, you can say something like, "Hey, I just found this other." Bird watching guide by Aaron Monahan, and this thing will blow you away. It covers some things that aren't in my guide. I really like it. Click here to get it. And you can start making money off affiliate offers because you've become a trustworthy person in their life. They trust you and your opinion, and you've built a relationship, and that's really what email marketing is about.
Now, you disagree with me, feel free to do that too. Or agree with me, but how much of this is dictated by what you're promising them on your website? If you're saying, you know, a lot of people use the mini course type format. I'm going to send you a mini course every other day for, 5 days or something on the secrets of bird watching.
Right.
So obviously you're packaged into what you're going to be delivering them then, so you don't really have as much freedom, right?
Yeah, no, that you're absolutely correct, and you've hit on a really important point. One of the things we're testing is telling them that they're going to get a massive newsletter, and that, you know, there's tons of issues to come, et cetera. And what we're finding is that the unsubscribe rate is so dramatically lower that it might be paying off, and we're not entirely sure in some cases, but I think that, you know, ultimately you need to deliver what you're promising.
Right.
I don't think many people are promising, I'm going to sell you in the next 7 days, you know. So it is important to give value because in after message one, if they don't like your stuff, you know, they're going to unsubscribe.
Right.
If you look at most logs where you see unsubscribes per message,
mm-hmm.
most of the unsubscribes in a sequence will happen on message two, not message one. And that always baffled me. And when I first saw that, I thought it was something that I was doing wrong on message two. So I kept testing different things, and it always held true. Message two had more unsubscribes than message one. What I finally realized is what's happening is that first message comes and they might just delete it instantly,
right.
Or they might read it and they go, whatever,
right.
And they don't realize they're going to start getting emails from you all the time.
Right.
And once they get that second message a few days later, they're like, oh, you know what, this guy's going to start emailing me like crazy, and so they actually go through the process of unsubscribing. So if you're not delivering value in that very front end, you're going to lose them. And you never know how many people you're losing just because they read your first message and then right-clicked in their Outlook and said, create rule, anything from Yannick bird-watching secrets go straight to my junk mail folder. You don't really know you lost those people.
Right.
But chances are you're losing a lot for that method as well. So,
okay.
And the sales, you know, just briefly, the sales from those first three messages are going to be the biggest portion of your sales from your autoresponder sequence, simply because that's when your target is the hottest. So it's all the more reason to really focus on those first three messages.
And you've done tests where you've added things or deleted things or changed your messages around that had dramatic impacts?
Absolutely. Anything with social proof always seems to work best because a lot of times they don't trust you in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're doing like an FAQ type of message, Instead of doing here are the questions I've been receiving and then paraphrasing them, I actually would paste in the questions from readers and say, you know, question for me, reader, here's the question. And, you know, I get all these techniques from marketers and really smart direct response people that I've observed. But that really seems to work well.
And, but do you cite the person's full name without their permission?
No.
Okay, so it would be like Sally G or something.
Yeah, I usually do just initials if I don't have their permission.
Okay.
And a lot of time I'll have the support people reply back if we want to use the thing and just say, hey, do you mind if we use this question in one of our emails? And what you'll find is as you develop more and more messages and develop a following around email, people want to be published.
Yeah.
They, you know, they'll put, dear Aaron, please publish this in your next newsletter and answer it. Here's my question. And then they'll put the question. So it becomes kind of an interesting effect.
Yeah, and that just as another side point for people that are getting overwhelmed or starting to get overwhelmed with email and questions and direct stuff, like for what I do, and I don't know if you do this too, Aaron, what we do is we try and compile them and we send back my virtual assistant sends back a generic message that says, you know, Yana can't answer every question one-on-one, but we'll be taking a look at this and adding it possibly to a future newsletter or something like that, so it might be answered in there. So that way, instead
that's
of answering...
That's actually a great idea. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Well,
that's great. You're increasing your readership. That's fantastic.
So we try and you know, my thing is about leverage, so if I'm going to answer someone one-on-one, I might as well let everybody else read it, too.
Absolutely. The only time I answer with someone one-on-one is if they're, like, panicking or something. We'll have kids that email in and say, you know, my deadline for my essay is tomorrow, and here's my essay, and I want to go to Cornell. Can you sometimes I'll just feel my heart goes out to them, so I'll sit down and answer it, but it's not a very efficient use of time.
Right, right. All right, a couple other quick things, and then we'll move on to Tim. Something that you mentioned, and I thought was really interesting, is that you're talking about copywriting. You talked about long copy versus short copy and some of the tests that you had. So tell me about, you know, how you use, what you've seen between the long and the short copy and what's been surprising to you.
You know, the thing that's been surprising is because, you know, I started with internet marketing, you know, and I was reading Jay Abraham, and I thought long copy. And
right.
I'm still convinced that ultimately long copy is the answer. The problem is that a lot of people aren't good enough at long copy to make it work better than shorter copy.
Okay.
What I mean is if you're not an advanced copywriter, sometimes being briefer is better because what people the mistakes I see happening are people are writing 20, 30, 40-page sales letters, but they're forgetting a lot of the essentials about making your offer clear. You know, if you look at direct response, you know, direct mail, and you look at a direct mail package, there might be a 30-page sales letter, there might be a 5-page sales letter.
Right.
What's interesting is there's usually an offer card, an order card that really stands out in that package that's not attached, it's not stapled to the letter.
Right.
It explains the offer clearly. And a lot of these websites that I see, you know, you have to scroll down through 15 pages to hit the order button, and then the order button takes you to a page that might kind of explain the offer, but usually it's just something generic like, yes, Yannick, I'm ready to take advantage of your offer,
right.
And that's it, you know. I mean, you really got to – if you want that order page, I mean, if you looked at the click-throughs to order button and then the click-through, how many people actually buy from you, you'd just be amazed because a lot of people are just clicking the order page just to see – what the price is, what it looks like, and satisfy their curiosity, and then they leave. They had no intention of buying. And so what I really like to do now that I'm kind of discovering this about myself is that, you know, a lot of our older stuff is so poorly written or written in the beginning that isn't converting the way it should be, is that shortening it up is actually better because I'm just boring people. And the way I came across this was I did an exit pop survey, and people kept saying, too much to read,
mm-hmm.
Bored, too long, too much information, you're too wordy. And I'm like, no, they don't understand this, actually. It's a little better, you know. But the truth is, you know, it was too wordy and it was too long. And that was, you know, you want to hit the essentials. But, you know, if you're selling that bird watching guide, you don't want to spend a page talking about, you know, one tip where you know how to spot – this certain type of bird that's only in Alaska, because then you're just boring anyone that has no intention of going to Alaska.
Right.
And that's why the email model is so effective, is because each email message, what you can do is you can start really targeting different specific areas around your topic that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate in your sales letter. So that's one thing we've tested on short copy. The other thing around copy that's interesting that that a lot of people aren't doing yet is this kind of intermediate order page between the sales letter and your actual order page.
Uh-huh.
And I think this works best, especially on ClickBank products. You know, Jeff Mulligan talked about on stage how he kind of puts a screenshot below the order button that says, you know, here's what the ClickBank site will look like, just to kind of prepare them in their mind for what they're going to get themselves into when they click your order button. And but what's interesting is it oftentimes will increase conversions if you put kind of a three-step generic one-page intermediate page, even though it requires an extra click, just kind of saying, you know, step one, you're going to fill out the order form. Step two, you're going to download the book. And in each of these steps, we'll have a brief description. Fill out the order form. This order form is encrypted with the top-of-the-line SSL technology, the same that the banks use and financial institutions online. Step two, you're going to download the product. The product's very easy to download. It works on any computer. And if you need to download it to multiple computers, you can do that too. Step three, you know, enjoy the success of bird watching. You know, if you're not completely satisfied with this, remember you can get all of your money back. And I usually like to do something extreme and say, you know, you can even keep the book. That's how confident I am. Is just ask any bookstore next time if you can get a refund and keep the book. And I got that from a buddy who used that line. And it just, you know, I think it's cool. But, you know, make that three steps and then click here, and then have all kinds of arrows pointing to click here, or make it very prominent on the page so that you get them to click, and you're just taking them by, you're holding their hand and taking them through the process.
All right, so this is not an order form. This is just the...
Exactly. That's an intermediate page between the sales, because your sales letter isn't going to say, it'll have a lot of that information in
right.
it at the bottom. But what people, I mean, if your sales letter is a long sales letter, they're not necessarily going to read all of that. And I was talking to Jeff Walker at your seminar, actually,
yeah.
The first time I met him. He's a brilliant guy. But he mentioned that when he launched this product, that he had this huge, the formula one?
The product launch formula, yeah.
That he was getting sales within, you know, 1 or 2 minutes product launch, because he had built up so much anticipation.
Right.
I mean, he was like, there's no way they read my 40-page sales letter in 1 to 2 minutes. It's just impossible. So it's just an example of how people don't read all of your copy. I mean, I've bought tons of products where I didn't read the whole sales letter. I just went to the order form. I was convinced, okay, sign me up. So you want to take advantage of that and leverage that by creating kind of an intermediate, you know, test it just like anything else, but an intermediate page explains the offer and kind of overcomes all the last-minute objections before you get their money.
Yeah, I like that. I like that intermediate page. That's very cool. And then any other interesting things that you've done with copy and use them in different places?
You know, just remember that copywriting is about every single thing you write that a consumer will see. It's not
yep.
just about your sales letter. It's about your landing page, your download page, your support emails, everything.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, all right, how about, I don't know, let's talk about download pages. What have you done there
The download page is important because ultimately you're going to want to sell this person, and what you're selling on the download page
mm-hmm.
is... You're selling your product again so that they don't refund it. You're selling it again so that they tell their friends. You're selling it again so that they buy from you in the future. So, you know, you really need to, you know, if they get to the download page and it's clumsy and it's not very helpful and there's no help links and there's no instructions on downloading, it's just this link to a PDF doc, that's
right.
not a very good customer experience. It makes it much easier for the customer to justify asking you for a refund regardless of what the content is. A lot of people go into the buying process anticipating, you know, asking for a refund. Like, I just got to see this, but I'm probably going to ask for a refund if
right.
it's not pretty good. So, you know, wow them with a great experience and make it as easy on them as possible, and you're much more likely to not get the refund. You're much more likely to have someone tell their friends about your product. And you're much more likely to get your emails opened from your customer autoresponder sequence, which are upselling affiliate offers and other offers that you offer on the back end. So the copy you need to be thinking you're selling that, and the way you sell that is just by providing such a great experience and also kind of selling them again on the product. Say, remember, here's what this product does, and take a few bullets from the sales letter and pop them on the download page. That way, you know, they just, because whatever it was that triggered them to buy your product will trigger them again when they read it again. It's kind of like, you know, a retention program in a sense. So, you know, if you look at what Nightingale Conant does from its retention side, you know, they're continuously selling you on their products even after you've already bought them, because, you know, in the package where you get the product, you get a kind of a sales letter on why this product is going to change your life. Even though they're not selling it to you again, they're selling you to keep it and buy more from them.
Yeah, that's a great example. That's just a powerful mindset, and sometimes I even forget it. And you know, just on simple things, and like for instance, on our site when we introduce our affiliate program, we have headlines on there and testimonials and awards that we've won for our affiliate program and so on. And most people never do that. And you're absolutely right.
One thing that I like with the affiliate programs that I started doing was the top 25 reasons to join the blah 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 affiliate program. And I would just, you know, overload the benefit you get from being one of our affiliates rather than anyone else. And I do the same thing, as I'll usually have like a headline, or I mean a testimonial at the top.
Right.
If I can get a really good one from someone that might be known in the industry. And I try to get that testimonial to include real money amounts, like I earned X number of dollars in X amount of time
right.
from the affiliate program. It's been great.
Yeah. That's very smart. So a big takeaway from this call is for everyone to think about copyright, not just for their sales letter, but for every aspect if they can.
Yeah.
You know, something a bit off topic of marketing, and this is kind of neat, and I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this, is, you know, you walked into my suite at the Marriott, and we did a speaker meeting, and I saw you lugging around your journal that you had there. And I've seen you carrying it with you the entire weekend there in D.C. And so tell me about this thing that you got with the idea of keeping a journal. Who introduced you to it, and how's it work? What's it do?
One of my mentors introduced me to it, and he said, you know, you got to get one of these. And he had brought it to the first meeting I had met him at. And after we had coffee, I went to Barnes & Noble and bought one of the really nice ones for $20 or whatever, the leather ones. Because I was used to having the little Walmart notebooks and never really thought of a journal as a cool thing to have. But, you know, it's not really a journal in the sense of a dear diary, here's what I did today. It's more a journal in the sense of, you know, and a lot of studies have shown that writing things down is much more powerful than typing them out.
Mm-hmm.
And from an intelligence standpoint, from a retention in your memory standpoint, et cetera. So I'm kind of low tech in regards to, I don't really use a PDA to write things down in, and I'm kind of behind the curve in those regards. But, you know, I write all my thoughts down in the journal. You know, when I was at your seminar, when I had a really great idea, I didn't put it down in the notebook that you gave us. I put it down in that journal that I was carrying around.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go back to the exact pages where I was at your seminar, and I can go through and kind of remember exactly what was going on. I have content in there from the presenters on stage. I have email addresses and contact info and notes about people whose business cards I got, about what they do and little things that I recall about them. That way when I you know, came home the next week and wrote everyone and said, hey, it was nice to meet you. I knew a few little tidbits about them that I could mention and just, you know, jog my memory. And, you know, if I'm brainstorming, that's just kind of my, where I dump all my thoughts. And, you know, you go through them pretty quickly when you carry it around 24/7. So I've got stacks and stacks and stacks of them that are all completed now, which is kind of cool to go back every once in a while through all your old journals and see how far you've progressed.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I have a little separate thing that I do. I have just an idea journal that I keep where all ideas go into. But what you're saying is pretty much everything from notes to phone numbers and emails go in there.
Yeah, you know, I do it for business and life. You know, it's all.
Is it combined?
Yeah, I mean, they're all combined. They're all one. I mean, to me, I mean, self-improvement is core to, you know, being a successful entrepreneur. So they all kind of mix into the same journal. But, I mean, yeah, just do whatever works with you. The idea journal sounds like a great idea, too.
Yeah. Now, do you Is this something you write in every day, or is it just any time that there's something that you want to remember or jot your memory for?
I don't schedule a time to write in it or force myself to write anything down or anything. It's just whenever I have something that I want to take notes on or I want to put an idea in paper, that's what I do. And it sits next to my bed so that when I every once in a while I have those brilliant ideas in the middle of the night, I have somewhere to write them down. So.
Yes, and wait till you get married. Your wife absolutely hates that. I'll wake up
exactly.
And turn on the light, and Missy's like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "I gotta write down something." She's like, "God."
And then when you wake up in the morning, it just wasn't nearly as good of an idea as you thought it was at 3 a.m.
Yeah, but that's okay. It's all about getting the ideas down, because I firmly believe it.
Paper.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, like Earl Nightingale is one of my favorite mentors, and he said ideas are like slippery fish. You gotta spear them with a pencil or a pen. And, so.
Nice.
That's my thought on it. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Actually, before I ask you the last question and before we wrap up and bring Tim in. By the way, Tim, are you on yet?
I'm here.
Excellent. Talk about, I mean, you've obviously done a lot of, just from talking with you a little bit and this thing with the journal, any other self-improvement type things that are not marketing related that has made a big impact on your entrepreneurial life?
You know, one of the most powerful things that I did over the past few years was anytime I met someone who I kind of regarded as successful or who I figured I could learn something from, which is just about anyone, but
mm-hmm.
I would always ask them what their favorite books were and what their favorite resources or audio programs were.
Yeah.
And what I found is it was kind of like a referral system for all the great things to read and learn from. Instead of going to a bookstore, I never go to a bookstore and start browsing for books. I pretty much have this huge laundry list of things that have been recommended to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty powerful because you really learn quick, you know, what the best stuff is out there. It's just one thing that popped into my head that I've been doing. So.
All right, so then I'll ask you, what's the books that you recommend since you've got recommendations from a bunch of people? Give us a
sure. What area? What topic?
I don't know. Let's. How about marketing and then maybe self-improvement?
Marketing. Yonex Underground Copywriting Course. you know, marketing. I'm a big fan of the classics: Scientific Advertising, Ogilvy on Advertising, Tested Advertising Methods by John Caples. Anything by Jay Abraham is usually good. I particularly like The Money-Making Secrets of Mr. X.
Yeah.
Because it was the first Jay Abraham book I read. You know, anything by Gary Halbert. I've read all the newsletters at GaryHalbert.com. Stacks and stacks and stacks of those things.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of newsletters printed out. Let's see, who else? I mean, a lot of the internet-specific knowledge that I gain is from, you know, the so-called gurus online. I've learned a lot from you. I've learned a lot from a lot of the guys in your space. So I think that, you know, if I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to learn, you know, good old classic direct response marketing, I go to the classics oftentimes. If I'm trying to learn the newest landing page tests and the latest secrets about how to get listed in search engines, I'm surfing online and looking at people's newsletters and products and stuff. So,
okay. Self-improvement stuff.
Self-improvement. There's tons. I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins. He'll pump you up if you listen to him in the morning, maybe in your car drive to work or something. Anything by Tony Robbins. I particularly like the Get the Edge program, Personal Power, and that kind of stuff. Brian Tracy is great for on the audio program front as well. I'm actually a huge fan of Earl Nightingale. I just got his I had listened to Lead the Field so many times.
Yep.
I got the course that he did. I don't even know what it's called. Laws of Success.
Yeah.
It's similar to what Napoleon Hill did, which is they created this huge course and then they created this mini version of the course, and the mini version is what's so well known.
Yeah.
Lead the Field is like the mini version of this huge thing. You're familiar with this?
Yeah, I have it. I don't think too many people have it.
Yeah, I found it at Nightingale Conant's website, and I was like, whoa, what is this? And, you know, Napoleon Hill did the same thing, which is another fantastic book, Think and Grow Rich. But he created the whole Laws of Success, you know, and there's like 10 volumes of this stuff, and, you know, it's all just priceless information. So,
yep. Okay.
The last one I would mention, by the way, is Dan Sullivan. Not many people know about him, but he's got a strategic coach company, and he's also got a product called Pure Genius, which is just really revolutionized the way I think about work and improvement. So,
yeah, that one, you know who introduced me to him? Well, I've heard about Dan before, but who introduced me to that program was actually, I think, a friend of yours, Dean Jackson.
Yes, indeed. And
Dean is a very astute marketer, and he introduced me to that, and it's a really remarkable program, and the whole concept behind the days off and so on, and it's very cool. Do you follow that, by the way?
What's that?
Do you follow that with having?
I don't follow the days off, but I follow. I'm a big fan of his life extender approach, and everything he talks about unique ability is really true. So.
Yeah. I'm basically the same way. I haven't got to the. I've toyed with taking complete days off, and it just doesn't seem to work for me.
can't pry yourself away from the computer.
Not always, or you know, I'll have to be writing down ideas if I'm away on vacation or something. But
just bring your journal.
Yeah, it's the entrepreneurial life. All right, I got to. I'm going to move on to Tim. Any one or two last parting thoughts for people?
No, just thanks for having me on the call, and thanks for having me at the seminar.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Aaron, for everything you delivered. Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great, Mr. Yonk.
Yeah. Are you having good weather over there, too?
It's kind of a nice day. It's 77.2 degrees Fahrenheit here in Cincinnati, and kind of balmy, a little humid. It's one of those typical spring days, you know, where it can't make up its mind if it's summer or late winter.
that sounds okay, though. Not too bad.
It's a nice day. It's a nice
day.
Yeah.
All right. Let's. I'll start with some attendee questions, and I'll get into some of my own if you don't mind.
That's fine. I'm ready.
Okay. I mean, you had a mob of people around you at the event. So,
that's only because I was paying them. Those were all my cousins that were there. I told them where I was going to be at the hotel, and they just kind of came down.
Made you look good.
Yeah.
And of course, the underground. Internet Marketer of the Year for 2006. I forgot to mention that. That's very important.
I was pretty proud of that. I'll tell you, the competition was tough, man. I mean, it was. He had great speakers, and I mean, I'll be very honest with you. After the second day, I didn't think I had a chance. But I guess the people remembered. You know, they remembered back to Friday. So.
Yeah. Well, that was awesome. Congratulations again on that. All right, I'll start with a couple attendee questions. Would you look for your own sponsors, or would you let Google do it for you? And by clarification, he said, let's assume that you're fussy about who advertises on your site. And he says, I'm a financial guy and don't want to advertise for people that might be particularly shady or someone that he doesn't trust.
I do both, actually. And in other words, Google, of course, serves up all of the sponsors, you know, that are in those AdSense blocks. You know, I'm not doing any of that. And probably some people who came to the conference realized that you can block companies. AdSense allows you to do that.
But some
newbies may not know that. You can block companies.
So you don't advertise your competitor.
Yes, absolutely. And also, in my instance, I do happen to know that there are some building products companies that don't make a great product.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely block their ads because I don't want my visitors buying their products. Well, I don't want them buying them through me.
You know? Gotcha.
I mean, if they buy them somewhere else, you know what? Okay, but at least I don't want to get my hands dirty in the deal.
So that makes a lot of sense, and that's simple in the interface for Google. It's
really easy to do that, but the problem, I mean, but Google's smart though too. The last time I checked, they only allowed you to block 200 URLs. And the reason they do that, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, they don't want you to throttle it down too much, or otherwise, why should they bother throwing ads up if you're going to block everybody?
But 200 URLs is a lot, though.
It's a lot. It is a lot.
That's more than enough. There's usually not 200 bad eggs in the whole basket.
I've been up to about 80 before.
Wow.
You know, every now and then I have to, you know, go in there and kind of clean house. But I've gotten to 80. So
okay.
But as far as my ads, I'm really particular. For example, I mean, actually, it was kind of funny. Something today just happened. I got an email from a company. I'm not going to say who they are,
right.
And they were kind of ragging on me a little bit. because they wanted to advertise my site, and they were upset that I hadn't gone to their site to look at it. And then he said in his email that I gave poor advice about a given topic, which I took great offense to, because the information is bulletproof that's in this topic. And I don't want to say what it is because I don't want to give away who this person is.
Right.
So anyway, I go to his website, and it's extremely it's a good-looking website, but the information there is very bare and minimal. And, you know, there's no satisfaction guarantee. There's no nothing. So I typed him back an email and said, hey, look, you know, you're the one who fired the first shot across the bow saying that my website's got poor suggestions. But let me tell you something. I wouldn't even take your advertising money because of these reasons. You know, and this person even has a Hotmail account. That's what's even on his website. He's got a domain name, and he uses a Hotmail account.
Yeah,
like, how unprofessional is that? You know, so in other words, I would not take this guy. If this guy offered me $10,000 today, saying I want to buy this category, I'll give you $10,000 right now, I would not take it. I mean,
okay.
that's how I am. In other words, I'm not going to have bad people on my website.
Yeah, and I think that really shines through for because ultimately it's all about the credibility with your end user.
That's it down the road for everything, Yannick. You already know that. That's how you're building your business. That's
yeah.
how everybody who's on this call today and how everybody who came to the conference, if they're not going to do it that way, then, I mean, just think how it is in the real world. Do you like doing business with people you don't trust?
Right.
You don't feel good about it. You feel uneasy. You feel, so I'm not going to do business that way. You know, I'm just not, if I make less money, okay, but you know what, I can sleep at night.
Yep. Okay, good point. Well
yeah.
taken. All right, so next attendee question is, do you wait for Google to naturally pick up on your site, or do you utilize other techniques like submitting to Google site mapping or any other tips for getting search engines to find your sites quicker?
Google naturally picks up on my site because what happens, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, the Google bot it can spider a site hourly. And it's all looking for the frequency with which you add information to your site.
Okay.
And right now, Google comes to my site about 3 times a day. So they know that I add content regularly. And since they know that I add content regularly, since they know that the content, for the most part, is usually pretty good, that's what they want to do. In other words, they remember what Google's job is. Their job is in that first page of results to throw up what they found to be the best content in the world. So as long as you're producing that content on a regular basis, you don't have to use any of those other magic tricks because Google's going to serve it up to their customers. So I am not doing the site mapping. And the tips of getting on the search engines is simple. Develop high-quality content. Just like I said in the talk, work it around the keywords, like in that long tail,
mm-hmm.
and the magic's going to happen. In other words, give people what they want. It's that easy.
All right, but now your site's already established, and Google knows to look for that, and it'll spider that site. What if there's nothing yet?
We all know about the sandbox. All right, that's not going away. And the reason why the Google sandbox is not going to go away is very important when you think on just a natural scale. They don't want to throw somebody way up into the index that they don't necessarily trust yet or they don't think has staying power. Okay, so remember what I said? I guess everybody's going to get the DVD. In fact, I got to ask you. I hope I can get a DVD of my of
Yeah, you definitely do.
But anyway, I could swear that I said one of the first things I said in the first 2 minutes was anybody who thinks this is going to be easy and you're going to make money in the first 3 to 6 months, just leave the room now. You know, I thought I said something like that because the point is this is people who want to do this and make the big money long term should have this attitude to be in it for the long haul. And if you're willing to play by the rules and you're willing to be patient while Google's getting you out of the sandbox, the payoff's going to be big. So, I mean, you can try to do all this getting inbound links. You can try to go get a link from somebody else or pay to bleed off PageRank and do all of that. But remember, this is the tenet that I keep saying. Google is hiring the smartest software engineers in the world that they can get their hands on. and you don't think that they know what we're talking about? You don't think they're looking at the blogs out there? They're smarter than we are. So anything that we try to trick them with, they can easily fix that or plug that hole in the dike. But if you just do it naturally, that's what Google wants. You know, they love that.
Okay.
To answer that person's question is that you can try to do stuff on the short haul, but if you're getting linked from a site that doesn't really have much to do with your site, that would be like me. I guess in nature, the analogy would be. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I don't know anything about cooking. Okay, my wife's a cook. I'm not a cook. I mean, I can cook breakfast pretty good. Okay, but if you ask me, who is the best chef for fettuccine Alfredo? And I gave out some name. It'd be worthless because I don't know anything about it. I just know it's some kind of noodles with garlic on it. You know. So that's how Google feels about sites like some site about termites linking to a site about jazzercise, you know, bleeding off PageRank. It's like, give me a break. What do termites have to do with jazzercise and vice versa? Nothing.
And that hurts you in the long run.
Think of how the engineers look at that at Google.
Yeah.
They must be laughing at the lunch table. Can you imagine what the lunch conversation is at Google some days? Like, guess what I found today? Some guy, man, who just created a link from his site about jazzercise to a termite site, and he's got a page rank of 8. Yeah, right. Like, we're going to look at that? Give me a break. We know what's going on there. You know.
That's my
– I don't have any proof of it. I just think how I would react if I was sitting in the lunchroom.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
You know.
Okay, let's move on here to another attendee question. How many incoming links do you have to AskTheBuilder.com, and how much is that a success factor versus the content?
I checked this morning. You know, I just did that link : www.AskTheBuilder.com, and I came up with 477, which I think is paltry. I think it's just miserable. I know this sounds crazy. I have no idea if that's a high number or a low number.
Because it probably depends on anyone else in your field, though.
Right, I understand, but to me it seems like a very low number.
Right.
So anyway, if in fact that's right, because I don't even give that any attention, you know, inbound links. I never have. I've never asked for an inbound link. I think the answer to the question is Google places a much greater value on the quality of the content than they do the incoming links, because I can show you in hundreds of instances where I am the number one or number two result on the first page.
Mm-hmm. And that's mainly due, because like you said, that's probably a small, and I don't have anything to reference it by. Actually, I just typed in real fast to see what my incoming links are, and on AltaVista I got 303 to one of my main sites.
Yeah, so maybe 477 is good. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just never tried it. You know what I mean? I don't waste my time doing that. I mean, I don't know how to say it. It's like I don't care.
Right. You care about the content.
I don't care. All I care about is content.
Mm-hmm.
How many articles a day can I write?
How many do you write, by the way?
Well, I'm trying to get up to 2. I struggled to get to 1 because lately I've had a bunch of other projects. Like right now, I mean, on a personal level, I am deeply involved. I decided back in late 2005, I looked at what I was going to do for 2006. I kind of do like a day of recollection where I kind of plan out what I'm going to do. And I looked at my income numbers to see where was my income really coming from. And I was astonished when I looked at the amount of revenue I generated each year from my ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, wow. You know, I mean, I see the orders coming every day, but until you total it up, you know, and really
right.
kind of look at it, I don't think much of it because I'm kind of distracted with other things. So I thought, holy moly, if I just did another 30 ebooks, my goodness, what the income would be. So it just so happens that here at the Carter household, there are 3 bathrooms on the second floor of my house that need to be totally redone. So Tim started that project 2 weeks ago. I started it myself, and I'm enjoying it. I'm having a blast. So out of those 3 bathroom projects, I'm going to generate about 25 very concise different ebooks, like how to put in a tub faucet, how to put in a bathtub, how to install granite wall tile, you know, how to, you know, see what I'm trying to say? I already know all the topics that the people are looking for.
Right.
So what's happened is that this remodeling work has kind of stopped me or put me in a bind as far as generating content each day. Plus, I have this other secret project I just started. I really can't talk about it. I'm sorry, but I'm kind of writing some content for that too.
Okay.
So, but people should try to write 2 to 3 columns a day minimum.
And how many words?
400 to 500. That's all it has to be.
Okay, so that's not too much at all.
And the reason why is because, remember, all that the content is, it's just a lure to get the person to the page, because if the advertisers are doing their job right, and you and I both know that there are really some professional people writing those AdWords ads,
mm-hmm.
if they're putting in the right keywords in their title and in their 35 words of description on each of the two lines, the people are going to see that, and that's going to solve the person's problem. Because remember, that's what I talked about. All that this is about is solving problems. Let the people who write the AdWords ads solve the problem. You just become the fly that the fisherman throws into the water. The content is just the lure. But
yeah.
It's got to be good content. I mean, because people are going to read it. I mean, you know, but it's not hard to write good content.
I know you've probably covered this on stage, but just to remind me, what is your thoughts on outsourcing content?
I think it's a joke. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, I've seen a bunch of this outsourced content. There are some good writers out there, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find them, that's great. But you'd be surprised how, if you just put your mind to it and you know how you can. I mean, I'm not a trained writer. I took regular English classes in high school and college. I don't want anybody to think that I went to journalism school. That did not happen. I have a degree in geology. Okay. So it just so happened that God blessed me with the ability to communicate. Okay. But I think everybody's a communicator. And there's great tools that help you become a good writer. In other words, I've got here in on my desk, I use just about every day the Associated Press style book. I use another great little book here called The Little English Handbook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those are just really basic books that tell you all the proper grammar and how things are supposed to be presented. You know, it's just, you know, if you just do that right and you write these shortish sentences, you know, that are not too choppy, you're in good shape. You know,
okay.
And tell a story. That people love stories, man. Tell a story as much as you can.
And that's for an article, tell a
yeah.
story.
Yeah, because you might be writing an article about I don't know, black bears, you know, and you could write a story about black bears and how maybe you saw the first time you saw a black bear, you were shocked at how they can stand up and tip over a garbage can.
Uh-huh.
Well, and you know, that creates a picture in somebody's mind. Oh, yeah, I've seen black bears before. You know, and they just kind of think back on that. You know, try not to make it a scientific paper. Try to make it as if you're just talking about a subject over the campfire. That's what people like. It's conversational.
Yeah, that's good. And,
I mean, I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. Let's say you wanted to write an article about an experience you had at the beach. You know, like you just thought, you know what, I want to write an article about charter fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe you've been on a charter fishing boat, and maybe because you were on one or you had a friend that was on one, like if you could talk to a friend who did take a charter boat fishing thing, you could find out, you know, an interesting story about it. Like I went on one, for example, last August up in Lake Huron. I'd never been on one before. And I get on this boat, and we're about 5 miles out into the lake, and the captain and the assistant captain start putting all these poles out on these in these holes, you know, in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were like 25 poles out. I'm going, there's only 4 people on the boat. Like, what are you guys doing? I mean, I thought that each person would have a pole. But that's not how they fish, man. They're serious about it. They want to catch multiple fish at the same time. You know, so that's a story. I mean, I would have never thought. I just thought they were going to hand two of us a pole, like it was myself and this other guy. But I'm telling you, man, they got all these special things that make the lines go out so that they don't get tangled. They've got special things that make the hooks go 5 feet off the bottom of the lake. It's like, holy. I mean, the hooks were out different widths. They were they were at different levels in the lake. It's like, oh my God, that's complicated.
Yeah,
that's a story.
Yeah, that is, and I've been deep sea fishing once, and I was definitely astounded by.
See, if I wrote that, like I could write that right now, if I had a site where I wanted to write about fishing charters, that if I was reading that and I had never been on a fishing charter,
mm-hmm.
if it's written just right, it's like, you know what? I think I want to go on a fishing charter. I want to see how they do that. And so, bing, somebody clicks the AdSense ad in that fishing charter column.
Right. That's a great example. All right, well, then that's kind of a good segue to another attendee question, and they're saying if you're starting from complete ground zero, would you set up a content site based on your passion or based on what keywords are paying well?
I would not base it on my passion. Passion makes it a lot easier to write. But I would go into WordTracker and identify the long tail, see if there's a long tail there. Then I start to go out and see if there are ads that support those long tail keyword phrases. If there's no ads, then I just go away. And there was actually an attendee. We did that on the last day when I had the groupies around me.
Uh-huh.
One of the women, it was very interesting. She wanted to do a website about, I don't know if I'm going to say this right now. I don't even know if she's on the call or not. It was an interesting topic in a way. She thought that there was this big need for people who wanted to see these museum guides. Like if you were going to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art,
right,
and you wanted to see what the museum was like before you got there, maybe. I think that's what it was.
Like a preview.
Yeah, like a preview or something, or like what was in store. She just thought that everybody in the world wanted to do that. So I go into WordTracker, and nobody in the world cares about that. I mean, not one person.
Harsh reality.
And she was stunned. And I actually had a fight with her for about 3 minutes, and then I finally gave up, you know, because she, in her heart, she thought it was such a great topic, and because she was interested in it probably, she felt that everybody else was, whether or not. Well, I'll give you one I found yesterday. Anybody who has WordTracker, you type the word hunting into WordTracker. Now there's a long tail.
Uh-huh.
That just blew me away.
There's a big difference there.
Oh my goodness, hunting. And I mean, I could just go on for hours about it. I mean, and then when you start typing those keyword phrases from hunting into Google and you start seeing all the ads on the right, it's like, bingo, we just struck gold.
All right, but then if you don't have a passion, is it, you know, I'm not a hunter, I've never been hunting. Would that be a bad choice for me?
No, why don't you talk to the people who are hunters?
Uh-huh.
Why don't you talk to them and interview them? Remember, we're kind of going right back. It's almost like an endless loop. We keep going back to what I said at the beginning of my talk. I never said this was easy.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of hard work at for a while, but once, think about it. Do you think that the genetic makeup of a black bear is going to change dramatically in the next 20 years? I don't think so.
Yeah, probably
I don't think
not.
There's going to be a major mutation. I'm not a biologist, but I don't think that they're going to change that quickly. Okay, so if you take a day and you talk to a black bear expert or a naturalist, like at a state park who happens
mm-hmm.
to be one, and you know the naturalists, they're paid by the government, they'll talk to you till the cows come home. Okay, I mean, they're paid to do it, okay?
Right.
They're paid to do it. Okay, so you get an interview with one of those people, you find out all the attributes about a black bear, you sit down, you write it, that content is good forever. Well, it's at least good for my lifetime.
Right.
You know, for 20, 30 years. Maybe I'll be here 40 years from now. I don't know. I hope I am, but I don't know.
But
that's all I care about. See, I'm just caring about, you know, a 20-year lifespan of shelf life on the content.
Okay, so...
And it's that simple.
So evergreen, long tail, and something that has people willing to pay for advertising.
That's exactly... Yeah, there's got to be... It's got to be the column or the content has to be solving a problem. Like, for example, in hunting... I want to go hunting. I need a gun to go hunting. I need the special boots to go hunting. I need those expensive camouflage gear. I need that very expensive stand that sits up in the tree. You know, that's what it's all about because you're solving those problems. That person needs to get outfitted to go hunt. And every year, here's the coolest part. Remember what I said about the conveyor belt. Every year there's a whole new group of people who never hunted before,
yep.
but they're going to hunt this year for the first time.
Right.
And then there's the group of hunters whose camouflage gear is worn out. He's used it for 10 years. It's now today time to buy a new one.
Yeah, David Ogilvy called it the moving parade of life, I think.
That's right. I call it I Love Lucy's candy.
That's a good analogy. People can always remember that old
yeah.
Episode. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. When I get the impression when I've talked to you before and listening to your talk and so on, a lot of your articles are, and just now when you're talking about your bathroom project, it's not an ebook on how to renovate your bathroom. It is really, really tiny, specific stuff.
That's exactly right. Tightly focused. Just because what I'll do, and then this you'll appreciate, because you and many of the people you hang with are, and I need to actually get some coaching from you, okay? In other words, I'm going to have 15 books that have to do with this one bathroom.
Right.
So, but one person may already know how to do drywall work.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't know how to put the daggone faucet in. They're terrified they're going to have a leak. Okay. So here, if I have 15 books about the project that each sell for $20 a piece,
mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not going to sell the whole set for $300. So
yeah.
That's where that magic comes in of marketing and packaging. Like, you know, buy the five, you know, pick five of every topic you want for $70 or
right.
You know, whatever that magic is, you know, all that magic marketing where, you know, you allow people to package their own. It's like they can, it's like each of my ebooks is a chapter and they can build their own book by going to the shelf and just buying whichever chapters they want. And if they buy so many, they get them for a special discounted price, blah, blah, blah. You know, so that's exactly right. You're never going to see an ebook from Tim Carter about remodeling a bathroom. Not going to happen.
But I think that is really, really powerful, and that also ties in perfectly with the AdSense stuff, because somebody is going to be typing. They're not typing in. Well, they are probably typing in bathroom remodeling, but there's lots of people that are opting or trying to go after that keyword and so on.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be in that claw fest.
Uh-huh.
That's like two teenage girls fighting in the playground. I mean. I mean, women and girls fight much dirtier than guys do. Have you ever seen two women fight?
Yeah, I think I have.
Okay, well, I don't want to be in that cat fight. You know,
right.
I'll go play over, you know, down farther down the long tail where people are typing those obscure keyword phrases, and there's no competition. I'm there all day long.
That's powerful if people take that to heart. For some reason, they see the big searches, or you know,
yeah,
50,000 people are looking for this, and that's where they want to go.
No,
they just want to go after golf or something.
Yeah, and that's what I tried to say up on the stage, is that, you know, why fight in those one or two keywords when you can go down the long tail and get 10 times the traffic, and you're getting the same people.
Yeah,
you know?
True. And they're more specific requests than they're gonna want to click on the ads, because they are so specific typically.
Yeah, because remember, it's a problem. Every single one of those keyword phrases is a problem, and if your product solves that problem, they're buying. They've got the credit card out, and they're tapping on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought of you today, like Frank Kern. I don't know if you do know Frank.
I've never met him, but I've heard about him.
Yeah, Frank's one of my good buddies. We're going on this road rally in next month, and so we're taking his car out, and we need to get like a GPS system, so... You know, I found something in Business 2.0, which is actually kind of cool, so I ripped it out. And instead of typing in GPS, I typed in the exact name of this little piece of equipment, the exact Navi portable GPS.
Right.
And actually, as I'm typing it, I'm thinking of you. I'm like, God, you know, this would be a perfect Tim thing. Not, you know, you're obviously not into that, but I'm saying it's a very specific phrase that someone was typing in. And if somebody
But it worked. See, look.
Yeah.
Look what you did. You knew exactly what you wanted. You knew you wanted that unit, so you type it in, and I'll bet you right in the top three results you got exactly what you wanted.
Oh yeah, there was eight, all the spaces were filled.
You got it right. Okay, so that's what people are doing all day long. I mean, I can sit here and do it while we're talking. I can go, you give me any phrase, any generalized phrase, and I'll tell you what the keywords are. I mean, you know, it's like I did it on the hunting one, like elk hunting, black bear hunting, elk hunting in eastern Montana. It's like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And it's completely different, because if you're going after hunting, someone's an elk hunter and someone's a bear hunter or whatever they are, deer hunter. They're not the same people typically. Some are, some aren't.
That's right.
And so you're going to be going after that little tiny niche. Okay, I think hopefully I beat this to death for people, but I think that's a really important point.
I think it's everything. I think it's the whole thing. If you get your arms wrapped around that, then everything should become crystal clear.
All right. One of the attendees had a question about how much should we expect to make using AdSense if we have about 200 sites? That sounds like a pretty open-ended question. Based on all kinds of variables.
It's a great question. If I had 200 sites, Okay, a month. Okay, let me get out my calculator. I hope everybody's sitting down. If you're not sitting down on the call, I want you to right now, because you're going to have a heart attack. You could make about $3 million a month.
Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
And now, but that's got to be dependent on what's on those 200 sites. I mean,
well, sure. It's got to be long tails. It's got to fit all those criteria that I said. But I can tell you that in the last month, just, you know, since I was in D.C. with you,
right,
I've launched two other websites that have nothing to do with building remodeling.
Uh-huh.
I've discovered and I have identified about 1,000 other websites that I would love to launch if I had the time. And I don't. I mean, and there are thousands of them out there. I'll actually say tens of thousands.
Really?
There is so much out there that no one has to worry. It's just a matter of how bad do you want it? How bad does a person want it?
Now, do you recommend, you know, I think where this
person...
In
fact, you know what, while we're doing it, have we got a minute? Can I do something?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'll prove it. Okay,
okay.
I'm going to prove it right now. So let's do, I mean, I'll give you an example. Let's do, okay, like people take vacations every year, all right? So, I
yep.
mean, they just do it, man. I mean, people take vacations. So let's type in, let's you and I agree right now. What would be kind of, what do you think is going to be a hot vacation spot?
I don't know, maybe Disney.
Well, that we already know that's a good one. Let's.
Okay.
I was going to do that too, but I thought, you know what?
How about Aruba? I go to Aruba every year.
No way, man. Not with Natalie Holloway, man. No.
Oh, we're not
going
to do it.
Let's stick with something here in the USA, man. I'll tell you what. Let's do Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach, good golf destination.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Good golf. It's, you know, it's warm. Blah blah blah. Isn't it Myrtle? I hope I don't have to get out my atlas.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh my God. Dude, if there's not a Myrtle Beach website, okay, so I type this in, and it's got an incredible long tail. Okay, so here's what's at the top. Myrtle Beach, number two is Myrtle Beach Hotels, 1,297 times a day. People are typing that in. Myrtle Beach Bike Week, Myrtle Beach Real Estate, Myrtle Beach Vacation Homes, Myrtle Beach Property, Myrtle Beach Real Estate MLS, blah, blah, blah. But let me go down here and grab one. I just want to show how this works. So I'm going to go farther down the list, one that's kind
of... Are you in Word Tracker right now?
Yeah, I'm in Word Tracker right
okay.
now. So, okay, so here's a really kind of interesting. Myrtle Beach Campgrounds, okay? Because, you know, people like to camp. Okay, 141 people type that in a day to the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to Google, and type that in. And... only one person, and they're actually kind of smart because they actually own that domain, only one person in the world, as I go down to 100, has that in their title tag, has that just exact phrase.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, and for some odd reason, they're number four in the search results. It's Myrtle Beach Campgrounds, and they've got Myrtle Beach Campgrounds contact information for camping RV resorts, and their website is myrtlebeachcampgrounds.com. Okay, but the point is, there's 10 results on that page. Do you see
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if you put in Myrtle Beach Campgrounds in your your domain name in the title tag, and the website was, I'm just going to pull one out of the air. It might already be taken. Let's just say it's Myrtle Beach Activities or just Myrtle Beach Information .com,
okay.
you know, or Myrtle Beach Tips.com. And then that page about Myrtle Beach Campgrounds was myrtlebeachtips.com/myrtlebeachcampgrounds.htm. You're going to be on the top 10 of results. No doubt about it. You might be in the top three. It's that easy.
That simple. And now you said how many, 191 or 141 or something?
Yeah, 141 people a day are typing in just that keyword phrase.
Now, where's the cutoff that it makes it worthwhile or not worthwhile, you think?
I may be attracted to numbers above 30.
So that's it?
You know, so I mean, but the thing is, you can, there are many. It takes long. I have to go all the way down this list. I'm getting to 30 right now. Here's some 31s.
Get this,
Yannick. So the first 30 number is, get this, it's Camping Myrtle Beach. Remember, the top one was Myrtle Beach Campgrounds. Well, here's
right.
somebody who's looking for the exact same thing, but it's Camping Myrtle Beach. So I would have a separate page where the title tag is Camping Myrtle Beach, you know, but it would have a little bit of different content on it.
Very good. Yeah, that's interesting.
But most people don't want to do the work to do all this.
Right.
They don't want it bad enough.
Right. Right. So okay.
I mean, they make excuses. And you know what? I think I said that at the talk. My daughter told me 4 years ago, excuses are reasons for failure.
That's a good quote.
I don't want to hear excuses, man. When you have results, you don't have excuses because you got stuff done.
Right.
Yeah, excuses are reasons for failure. Don't tell me excuses.
Yeah, yeah.
When my kids start giving me excuses, I just turn and walk away. I do. I just walk away. I do. I don't even let them finish talking. I just walk away.
That's good. I'll have to remember that when Zach starts talking.
Really? Just tell him he's weak. So he's weak.
Yeah, one of my mentors used to say that you can either make excuses or make money, but you can't do both.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, so about 30 is a good number. That seems so tiny.
Get this. Okay, right here is one. I'm going down this list. We talked about this before. Myrtle Beach fishing charters.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, you should see this tail. It's huge.
This is
just Myrtle Beach. Think how many. Think of the one you could do for San Diego. Think of the one you could do for San Francisco. Type in San Francisco.
I mean,
somebody could spend their whole life just doing the cities around the United States.
You know, that's
I'm
amazing.
Serious.
I know. I know you are too.
I mean, when I say that there are thousands of these, I'm not kidding.
Right. Yeah. That's very cool. And we didn't set this up beforehand, actually. You just did this on the fly. I had no idea.
I'll do another one real fast. Let's do. I'll tell you what, because I'm a big naturalist. I love nature, man. So let's go up to the East Coast, man. Let's go to Acadia National Park. Am I going too long here? Am I causing problems?
No.
Because this is
we're supposed
to teach people, right? Okay. So now this
is
an interesting.
Yeah, we're definitely supposed to teach people.
Okay, this is an interesting one. Okay, so here I thought Acadia National Park would be a good one. It's a bad one. Okay, so I type in Acadia National Park. Now, there's 571 people a day who are typing that in, but all of a sudden the tail gets really short really fast. I'm down into the single digits really quickly.
And what makes that important?
Because it takes me just as much time to do one single web page for something that's getting 600 requests a day as it does for something that gets 12.
Okay.
So this is where you have to be careful about the passion.
Like that, the lady you spoke to.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. In other words, I would not do Acadia National Park. I'm just telling you. But
right.
Now, okay, let's do something that's a little different. How about the Grand Canyon?
Right.
Because that's a big national park. I actually hiked to the bottom of it.
Oh, very cool. Did you take a mule down?
No, man. And it will kick your butt, man. If anybody ever does it, if you've not hiked to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, this is what you must do before you go down there. You have to trim your toenails. A lot of people don't know that. It's if you do not trim your toenails, you will be in such agony when you get to the bottom, you can't believe it. Because as you go down the trails, your feet like get pushed into the front of your boot, and it's extremely painful. But now Grand Canyon, now that's got a tail on it. There's some significant numbers here for Grand Canyon. You know, I mean triple digits for a while.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to say. You have to just kind of look at that tail and look how many people is. But like I said, it's just as much effort to create a single page that WordTracker tells you is getting 800 requests a day for as it is for 12. So naturally, I'm going to go after the one that gets 800.
Very good. Yeah, that's really, really powerful. All right, we got a couple minutes left.
Okay.
Do you feel like opening it up to questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
let's absolutely.
Let me take a couple live questions, and if it gets too noisy, I'm going to have to shut it down, but let's see what we got. Hi, guys. Anyone have a quick question for Tim?
What does Tim mean by long tail?
Sure. What the long tail is when I go into do you know what WordTracker is?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when you go into WordTracker and you type in a keyword phrase, like I just typed in Grand Canyon, and when I did it in the compressed search, And I'm looking at this list. Here's the tail. It starts. The first one is Grand Canyon, 6,960 times a day. The next one is From Grand Canyon. That must be a book. Then it's Grand Canyon National Park. Then the Grand Canyon. You know, it's all these keyword phrases that have Grand Canyon in it. Well, there's over 500 of them. Because when I get down to the 500th return that WordTracker's returning, it's down to 8. It's like Grand Canyon videos. That's the last one they're shown on this table. So that's a tail of 500 items that have the word Grand Canyon in it. That's a long tail.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and sometimes the tail, when you type in a keyword phrase, it might only be 30 long. So you're looking for things that are very long.
And you wanted a minimum of 30 words?
No. 30 times per day that people are looking for it.
For that particular keyword phrase.
For that particular keyword phrase. Like, for example, here in this one I'm at right now in Grand Canyon, the last one on the list is Grand Canyon videos, and it's only 8 times per day. But if I go up the list to where it's 30, I'm looking at, here we go, finally I'm at 30, Grand Canyon activities. Then there's Grand Canyon hiking, you know, and then there's things where there, you know, different ones below that. In other words, remember what I just said 10 minutes ago. It's just as much work to create a page for something that gets 5 views a day as 500.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather start multiple websites where I'm getting lots of traffic into these different pages. I don't care about becoming the world's expert on Grand Canyon. I don't care about that. I just care about the sweet moolah. that's all it's about, because I'm going to put that money to really good use.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else has a quick question for Tim?
Tim, on the 3 million for 200 sites, are you talking about income from AdSense on that, or from you developing an info product from that content?
AdSense. Yeah, AdSense, because I know if you build that website and it's pretty deep, it's got 500 to 1,000 pages, I just know what that income's going to be per day.
So those 200 those 200 sites are not 1, 2, 3-page sites.
Oh, no, man. These are sites that have 500 to 1,000 pages.
Okay, so they've got to be pretty complete.
Right. But that the person asked the question, so it's like I'm going to answer it, you know?
Yeah, if they're willing to put in the work.
If they're willing to put in the work. If you can crank out that kind of content. But here, let's think about it. If you can write 3 things a day, that's 1,000 a year. Okay, so it's 1,000 pages a year. We'll just round it off. So so in 10 years, you know, you've got some pretty significant websites with a lot of traffic.
Yeah, and like you said at the beginning, it's not you're going to have this.
But that's serious money, man. $3 million a month?
You could live off that for a little
bit. Dude, that is serious money. So in other words, so the message there is, if you're only looking for $80,000 a month, you only have to work hard for maybe 9 months and it's over.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, explain to me, you said, I can understand Grand Canyon is a good one to create a site around because there's so many different searches related to it, but what was the name of the park, Arcadia?
Arcadia National Park. It's a really beautiful national park up in Maine.
Now, there were 600 searches for that. But
yeah, but look at that. Arcadia had 600, but look at Grand Canyon is, I'm up here at the top, it's 10 times.
Okay.
6,900.
Okay, but you still wouldn't go after just the word Grand Canyon, though, right?
I would not go after Grand Canyon. I don't care about that because everybody's clawing and scratching at that one.
Okay.
But by God, I'll be going after Grand Canyon Lodging.
Right.
And I'll be going after Grand Canyon Pictures and Grand Canyon Rafting.
Okay.
And Grand Canyon Helicopter Tours and Grand Canyon South Rim.
And
look at this one. Grand Canyon Cell Phone Coverage. That's, 110 people a day are typing that in. Let's play with that one real fast. I've got to go. I'll bet you nobody's got that in their title tag, not one person in the entire world.
Now, is that the most important thing, is it the title tag, or is it the content of the article?
It's extremely important.
Okay. And it's just that simple. I mean, that's such basic search engine.
Nobody in the world has got that in their title tag. Not one website in the world, yet 110 people are typing in. And I can actually prove it. In other words, I actually think that, in fact, I did this. I did this as a test at the conference. I don't think I told you this. But the last day around the groupies were surrounding me, I actually had these two women write a column for me about medical billing services. I don't have anything to do with medical billing services.
Right.
Not as the builder. And I proved to them that if I did all the things right and I put that column of theirs on my website, that I would make it to the top 3 pages of Google. Because it was huge, man. Medical billing services is millions and millions of pages. I think I made it to 23 after 12 days. Yeah.
That's interesting. But it's also based because Google spiders your site every day, right?
Yeah, but the point is we were serving up the content that people are looking for.
Right.
Remember, that's what Google wants to do. Google's just like a restaurant. If you're going to a really fine restaurant, no offense if anybody here works for McDonald's, but they're not going to serve you a Big Mac.
Yeah.
They're going to serve you the best food the chef can make. Okay, so Google wants to do that each day. They want to actually serve up the best results they can find in the world, and I'm here to tell you that there are tens of thousands of content vacuums where people are not writing content for topics that people want to know about.
Yeah, and if I have my wherewithal, I'm going to try and suck some of those out for you for our underground people and try and figure out some way that, that you can work with some people.
Yeah, because yeah. There's
so many, I mean, there's just too much opportunity out there to...
I know there is, man, but there's only so many hours in the day.
Yep, I hear you. I hear you.
And it's really, I have to say this, it's the people who want it really badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can see that in people's eyes sometimes. You know, there are some people who say they want it, but they don't have what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have that desire. They don't want it bad enough yet. And remember, that was the last thing I said on the stage. How bad do you want it?
One quick follow-up on the search engine positioning thing, and I'm a total search engine dunce because I've never done any of it. Now, you said the title tag was really important for that particular keyword, but when you're writing articles, is that really important, too, to have a certain number of references to that particular phrase?
I just use the same keyword phrase as if I can to start off the first sentence in the meta descriptor. It's also my H1 tag on the page. Which makes perfect sense, you know, because that's what the headline that people are going to see. And then I try to use that phrase in the first sentence of the article.
Okay.
But no keyword stuffing. Don't do that.
And that means using it over and over.
That means using it over and over and over again. Do not do that.
Okay.
That's death on a stick with bird flu all over.
I mean, it sounds so simple. There, you got a couple tags, the meta tags and the H1 tag and title tag and using it in your article.
Just like I said, imagine, just look at the way the best writers in the world have written things. I'm like, when you read J.D. Salinger, when you read some of these other great writers, they don't keep reusing words.
Right.
Okay, so that's how we human beings react to stuff. You know, so Google doesn't like it either. They're not going to – they know those people that are trying to scam the system.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the more natural things are, the more Google rewards you, like you said.
You got that right. I mean, I think I'm living proof of it, but I think I've got the numbers to back it up.
Yeah, because of the, like sites linking to like sites versus completely unrelated, or the way, an unnatural writing would be keyword stuffing, and it would be, I've used my cell phone in the Grand Canyon, and my Grand Canyon cell phone reception is great, and my, you know, blah, 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 and that's not a real person.
Right. I mean, exactly. Here's, if I could get the stats real fast, Grand Canyon cell phone coverage, could you imagine if somebody had a map, if you could figure out a map or a quick way to find out and show where all the towers were, I mean, you know, on the roads there, that you could write a quick column and say, here's the Grand Canyon cell phone coverage, dudes, here's the map, here's the towers.
And I bet you could probably use Google Maps for that.
Yeah, and you'd be number one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at the results. Nobody has got it.
That's funny. So, that just makes a very clear point that instead of being where everybody else is scratching and clawing, like you said, you want to be after the little.
I'll pick those 110 people all day long.
And yeah, when you add up a whole bunch of 110 people, it becomes a lot.
Yeah, and then I look over here on the right-hand side of that page of Google, and there are 5 ads. Now, granted, there's only 5 ads, you know, but there are people who have got – you're going to see ads on that page.
Right. Okay, last thing, Tim, any new developments that you can share since the underground took place? I know it's only been about a month or so. Anything cool that you can share
with
people?
I can just tell you this. I am doing – some alpha and beta testing for another huge internet company. I can't tell you who it is,
okay,
but I can just tell everybody this, and this shouldn't really surprise anybody because things are constantly in a state of flux in the internet. But my whole gig is contextual advertising. I mean, that's how I'm, you know, making my money, and I love doing it because it's easy and it's on autopilot and I don't have to do anything, you know, once I write the content.
Mm-hmm.
There is a tsunami is going to hit the contextual advertising world in the next 3 to 4 months, and it's going to shake the business to the core, and it's all for the better. It's anybody who's running AdSense, anybody who's running any contextual ad product, it's just going to be wonderful what's happening. You know, in other words, context. I said this on the stage. Contextual advertising right now is in its infancy. It's like comparing the way that people used to get mail back 150 years ago. You know, the Pony Express.
Right.
You know, now we get mail with, you know, the airplanes bring it. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Contextual advertising today is like the Pony Express. Is all I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
So there's a huge change coming. In other words, the change that's coming now is like, well, you know what? We're not going to do Pony Express anymore. We're going to use railroad cars to put the mail on because the railroad trains go a lot faster than the horses do, you know, and they don't, you know, they go for longer without getting water. Okay, so it's just going to get better and better and better and better. So, I mean, that's why I'm trying to build more and more sites, and I encourage everybody who was at the conference to get off their butts and get the site created and get going.
Sure. So as soon as they can, get them going.
There's no excuses. I don't want to hear anything excuses. I was telling somebody yesterday, I actually had a meeting with somebody telling them some of these tips, a friend of mine from a television station here in Cincinnati. And I just said, he was kind of amazed with what I was telling him. And I said, if you are able to fall asleep before 4 o'clock tonight, then I suggest you don't do this. But if you are awake because of everything I've told you by 4, then there's a good chance you're going to be a success. So I'm going to ratchet that back for the people on the call because they've already heard some of this.
Right.
Anybody who falls asleep before 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock tonight, you don't want it bad enough. And you know, so but those who do, then that's a signal. It's like a signal from God telling you get to work. Get on it.
I bet some people are going to be drinking 3 or 4 Red Bulls tonight.
No, that doesn't count. God does not like Red Bulls, man. Oh.
Very good. Hey, Tim, thank you once again for coming on and sharing all this good stuff.
That's all right, buddy. I had it's my pleasure, man. You put on a great event, and I was glad to be a part of it. And you had a great group of people there, and I made some new friends there. And it changed my life, you know, I'll just be honest with you.
Oh, that's excellent. That's good to hear. I will keep, hopefully, if you give me the okay, when it is, when you give the green light on anything, any new developments, I'd love to keep people updated on it.
Oh, dude, you're going to be in on it.
Okay.
You know, that was our deal, man. You're in.
Okay.
I'm not going to do anything until you say okay. And can you hear this over the phone? Can you hear that?
Yep.
That's an envelope that has every single piece of paper and every single business card that everybody gave me. So we've got all the list, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm talking about just new developments in AdSense. Updated on that, too.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Tim, thank you very much. Enjoy the sunshine.
Okay, Yannick, thanks very much, man.
All
right. I'm going to hang up now, buddy.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
It's
bye-bye.
All yours. All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us again. And just remember, next week we're going to do it again live. With another 3 rogue underground agents. Check your email for who they are, and it's going to be the exact same call-in number as before, and we're going to do it for the next 3 weeks and counting. And you still got time to get your questions in for those additional calls if necessary. Thanks, guys, for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.